morning. Please be seated.
Good morning, Your Honor. We do have one person more time waiting for my client who's being sworn.
So I'll just remind you all that we are wiping down, sanitizing the podium in between attorneys. So please wait for the bailiff to do that. This is Bingson versus Kong Yen et al.
First of all, I want to thank the court and the court staff for getting oral arguments set and moving again. You guys are got a big sort of logistical challenge. We appreciate it. My name is Malaika Eaton, and I'm here representing appellant Sunny World and Ms. Kong and Mr. Yen. I'd like to reserve three minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honors. The right to a jury trial is a cherished right, but it is a right that is premised on both sides getting a full and fair shot to argue their case. When that does not happen, when one side does not get a full and fair shot, the jury is deprived of critical information it needs to balance the interests, to figure out who's right, who's wrong, and to ultimately decide who wins and who loses. Here, appellants were already at a disadvantage because of a language barrier, and they needed that full and fair shot. And the trial court, by depriving the jury of critical, admissible evidence on not only an important element of the case, but the important element of the case, which was state of mind, discriminatory intent, deprived them of that full and fair shot. Additionally, they were also deprived of the ability to respond to emotional appeals to the jury about embezzlement accusations, again, depriving them of their full and fair shot. Because of that, we're asking this court to reverse and remand so that both sides can get their full and fair shot to argue their case. Respondent in response does not actually respond to the key issues in the case. Instead, they raise new issues on appeal, for which neither the record nor the law supports. And additionally, they address arguments that we're not presenting before the court today. At the end of the day, unless this court has questions, I plan to first address the state of mind evidence that the court excluded about what happened at the critical board meeting, both why it was error and why it was prejudicial, and then do the same with respect to the embezzlement accusations. A trial court abuses its
identify
discretion.
Identify with regard to the mysterious Mr. Wu. Identify the evidence that you proffered that you did not otherwise get in and to which you have assigned error.
The proffer was that Mr. Wu would have, the testimony would have been from the people who were present at the board meeting that did testify, was to Mr. Wu's ultimatum. The ultimatum, my apologies, Your Honor, my mask is slipping. The ultimatum that Mr. Wu presented to the board.
Okay. So let's parse it through so we can make sure that we have a commonality. So you were allowed to present evidence that there was this board meeting.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You were allowed to present evidence that there were three owners.
Three board members.
Three board members. And you were allowed to present evidence that the decision was unanimous.
That's absolutely correct,
okay.
Your Honor.
You did not present evidence of any type that Mr. Wu was a 51% owner.
They were precluded from presenting evidence that
you don't assign error to any trial court ruling that precluded you from presenting evidence that he was a 51% owner.
The evidence that we're assigning error to is the ultimatum that Mr. Wu gave.
That ultimatum does not establish that he was a 51% owner.
That is correct.
It establishes that he was a declarant and what he said. So we're not concerned with the fact that he was a 51% owner. Because you don't assign error to any ruling that precluded you from presenting evidence that he was a 51% owner. So now we're down to they don't know that the presumably they don't know the fellow's name was Mr. Wu.
I don't believe they were permitted to name Mr. Wu.
Okay. So they don't know that it was Mr. Wu, but they do know that there's a third board member, and they do know that everybody wanted to fire her.
They know that the vote was unanimous, correct.
Okay. And it doesn't matter, according to your analysis, why Mr. Wu wanted to fire her, only that he wanted to fire her.
In other words, we are not offering that statement for its truth.
It doesn't matter to your analysis why Mr. Wu wanted to fire her, only that he wanted to fire her.
The statement incorporates a bit of the why, but it wasn't offered for its truth. It was offered for its effect on Ms. Kong, the listener.
Well, that wouldn't be material. That he wanted to fire her, according to your theory, is what's material. Because he was a majority owner, which you did not otherwise get in and don't assign error to, and that he wanted to fire her is your theory.
That the ultimate
that she was compelled to do it because Mr. Wu wanted it done.
Not just Mr. Wu wanted it done, Your Honor, that Mr. Wu said you have two choices. We
now,
can close the business.
Now you're for the truth of the matter asserted. If his reason is at issue, then it's for the truth of the matter asserted. Because she has to believe that it's true that he believes that if this is going beyond just the mere fact that he believes it.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because again, it's what is the effect on the listener? So Mr. Wu could have a secret belief that he's laying down this ultimatum, that he's laying it down, but ultimately he's not going to follow through. But if Ms. Kong believed
but there's no difference in her reaction if he just said, I want her fired. I am Mr. Wu. I own 51%. I want her fired.
I would again respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Again, the point of the matter.
So it's not offered for the fact that he wanted her fired?
It's offered for the effect on Ms. Kong. So in other words, when we're looking at her mind, and remember, discriminatory intent is not only a key element of a discrimination case, but in this trial, it was the contested issue.
Well, so is not presenting inconsistent defenses. So if the theory was, and it was at trial, that you considered firing her in September, but you decided to fire her in February, March, whenever it was, we'll revisit.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Wait for the sanitation, please.
May it please the court, Katie Chamberlain for Trina Begson, the plaintiff at trial and the respondent on appeal. Judge Dwyer is exactly right. This statement was being offered for the truth, and Judge Cahen reasonably looked at the statement itself.
Well, let's assume it wasn't offered for the truth. Let's assume it didn't matter to the listener whether it was so that there was an underlying truthful basis for what's been described as an ultimatum. Okay? That would mean it was just simply the fact that this person was expressing the opinion was what was important.
Yes.
To the three decision makers.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right? So then my question is, didn't that already come in when they were allowed to present evidence that there were three people on the board and their decision was unanimous?
It absolutely did, Your Honor.
And the only thing that didn't come in was the fact that Mr. Wu was a majority owner.
That's right, Your Honor.
And they don't assign any error to any ruling that precluded them from establishing Mr. Wu as a majority owner.
You're correct, Your Honor.
Was there any corporate documents tendered to be presented into evidence that established Mr. Wu's majority ownership that was not admitted by the judge?
Not a single one. Not a single document, Your Honor. And you're exactly right that this did not prejudice the defense at all.
So let me ask you then. The judge expressed, very unusual to read something, where a judge says, speaking of a witness, if this person actually exists. So would you have, if the judge had allowed this statement in, would you have pressed the judge to allow you to explore that question within this trial as to whether or not Mr. Wu actually said this, whether or not Mr. Wu was suffering from his mental illness at the time he said it, whether or not Mr. Wu is actually incapable of coming from China, and whether or not Mr. Wu actually exists? Would you have sought to do that in this trial if they had admitted this evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. We absolutely would have pursued that avenue.
So the jury would have been asked to engage in an entirely different set of issues, decision-making, if this had been admitted, as opposed to allowing the admission of the sting. There's more than two decision-makers. They all agreed to fire her.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's what the trial judge was confronted with, those two options. Do what the judge did and keep this trial going, or condemn yourself to an indefinite amount of additional time to engage in a trial of issues about which no discovery has taken place.
That's right, Your Honor.
That's where the trial judge was.
That's one of the various pieces that she reflected on in this ruling, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And you're absolutely right that it turned out it didn't matter. Defense counsel has appeared today and said that the defendants were prevented from a fair shot to argue their case. Let's talk about that. Their case, the whole case was about why was Ms. Begson terminated? Was a substantial factor her pregnancy? Or was it just that they were losing money? And that's what the hearsay statement was about. And that was the entire case they put on. They put on days of testimony about how many millions of dollars they were losing, about how they were under tremendous financial pressure, about the board meetings, about the unanimous decision to fire Ms. Begson for financial reasons. They absolutely got to put on their case, and you can see that by reviewing just the first few pages of defendant's closing argument. I'd also like to address, Your Honor, the issue of...
Let me ask you this. I'm interested in if there's any limiting principle to the Mr. Wu defense. Is there any civil action in which the intent or motivation of a party could not result in the assertion that somebody else made me do it, but they're mentally ill, they live in China, they can't be here, and the other side's never seen him or had a chance to talk to him. So in fairness, I must be allowed to repeat their words. Is there any type of civil action where intent or motivation of a defendant would be at issue where such a claim could not be made?
There are certainly situations where hearsay comes in for the impact on the listener. But what Judge Kahan was considering was the context and the arguments being made by the defense. And what opposing counsel said at trial during the discussion on the record is, Mr. Wu is a 51% shareholder of this company, so we obviously have something to say about whether the company's losing money or not. He is admitting, acknowledging to the court, that this is being offered for the truth. And the fact that Mr. Wu was not testifying at trial, the very purpose of the hearsay rule is to prevent unfairness, where an out-of-court statement is being testified to at trial and the other side has no opportunity to cross-examine. So Judge Kahan absolutely used her discretion and used it wisely. There are, Your Honor, situations where hearsay comes in for the impact on the listener. But Judge Kahan really honed in on the fact that the defendants were claiming Mr. Wu is their main person, the decision maker, and you cannot claim that his words merely went to state of mind. they were clearly offered for the truth, and she made the right decision. And even if she didn't,
well,
clearly there was
no. Well, to be consistent with their theory, it would have to be offered for the truth. Because
definitely.
Their theory was this worsening economic situation, absence of enrollments.
That was their whole case.
But if it's offered to show that what was important was that Mr. Wu was the majority owner and his will be done, that's an inconsistent theory. But still, you're allowed in civil actions to plead and prove inconsistent theories. But in employment discrimination cases, that can be used against you by the trier of fact.
That's right.
So there was, my reading of the record was, there was no time where the defendant said, Your Honor, we don't want this in for its consistency with our theory of the case. We want this in because it's inconsistent with our theory of the case. And it shows that our decision was ultimately made because of the wishes of Mr. Wu, not for the reasons that we are otherwise defending the case. That was never presented to the trial judge to consider.
It was not presented for the trial judge to consider. And what the trial judge had to consider was the proffer being made, which was a pure statement of fact, and defense counsel acknowledged to the trial court at the time that it was essentially being offered for the truth. He then pivoted, and the trial court focused in on the fact that they were claiming this is your main person, your decision maker. It's clearly being offered for the truth. And that's what trial courts get to do and do every day at trial. There are hearsay objections, and almost always there's some potential exception to the hearsay exception. But just because that can be articulated doesn't mean the trial judge needs to buy it, and she did not buy it here.
Well, but in fairness, I mean, they can offer it for whatever reason they want. If they're offering it not to show that the words convey a truthful thought, but rather to prove Mr. Wu's state of mind such that it affected the listener's state of mind, then is there anything that wasn't admitted that otherwise proved that, to which there has been an assignment of error?
There is nothing. Really, when you look at the entire trial record and you focus in also on the closing argument, it would have made no difference. It couldn't have possibly made a difference at the end of the day if the jury got to hear the third board member that voted the same as the two board members that did testify. He also thought they were losing money, and
yeah.
He also believed she had
but
to be fired.
That's an answer to a different question. What my
Sorry,
concern
Honor.
Is, isn't it so that they were allowed to say there were three board members, and they all agreed to fire her?
Yes, and they
which
said
is the gist of what the Mr. Wu statement would have tended to prove, if it was allowed to be verbatim. And Mr. Wu's declaration, his and I don't mean an affidavit, I mean his verbal declaration as the declarant, did not establish that he was a 51% owner.
It did not.
So by excluding his declaration, it didn't prevent anybody from establishing his ownership interest.
There was no proffer that he was going to say something like that. Of course, he wasn't testifying or that he had said something like
that.
And
there isn't any error assigned to any ruling that prevented them from doing that. Was there a ruling that prevented them from doing that?
That prevented them from talking about the board?
From saying he was a 51% owner.
The trial court said that
you can finish your statement.
That she had not been presented with any evidence to why that would have been relevant. Due to the nature of which they were seeking to admit the evidence.
Okay.
We ask that this court affirm the jury's verdict. Thank you.
And, counsel, I apologize. I forgot to write down how many minutes you reserved. Was it
3 minutes? You've got it right, Your Honor.
Thank
you.
It was your chance to say 10.
I know. We've got it recorded, Your Honor. So I just want to start with the critical factor is not, and we never argued this, Mr. Wu's state of mind. That was not the state of mind that was relevant. It was relevant to Ms. Kong's state of mind and Mr. Yin's state of mind.
But doesn't that only work if the 51% ownership is also in evidence?
No, it does not. Because, again, the ultimatum still impacts the state of mind. even if that third board member was not the majority board member, they're still responding to each other. It's a collective decision-making process. So the fact of the ultimatum and the fact of its impact on Ms. Kong.
But how is it even an ultimatum if he's not a 51% owner?
Because he's giving the two choices. We either have to shut down the business or we have to fire Ms. Benson.
But if he's a 10% owner, him stating that doesn't mean that it's going to happen. Does he have the authority to make that happen as a 10% owner?
My apologies, Your Honor. I don't mean to jump in on you.
No worries.
That's a question for the jury. That's exactly the type of thing that the jury should have been allowed to evaluate. And here what we have is it didn't come in. And the trial court, this is the shocking thing. We know that the trial court did not conduct the kind of analysis that this court is examining now and that we just heard from opposing counsel.
That just makes it Thursday in a trial court.
Because the trial court admitted if Mr. Wu was present, he could have testified. That's in the record. And we also have exactly the point.
Why is that shocking, that if someone actually appeared and took an oath, that they would be allowed to testify? That's not shocking.
And be cross-examined.
And be cross-examined.
And here's why. It was offered for a non-hearsay purpose.
But if we were going to accept your theory, wouldn't it mean that any time you have an employment discrimination case or a retaliation case where discriminatory or retaliatory animus is at issue, the defendant could just say, oh, there's this person who you don't get to depose, you don't get to meet, was in another country, who is powerful in the company and who told us to do this, and that's our state of mind, and that's and nothing discriminatory or retaliatory here. He just told us to do it. I mean, that's what I'm troubled with.
And let me just be clear. So first of all of the issues that Your Honor's raised with opposing counsel about whether he exists, what he really said, does he, you know, what's his ownership, all that stuff, that can be explored with the defendant on the stand. The fact that the jury doesn't get to meet this person, you can stand up in closing and say, you know what you heard? You heard their whole defense is this Mr. Wu. Where's Mr. Wu? Why didn't he come see you? If he was such a big deal, don't you think he would have come? All those things can be explored on cross, Your Honor. And I see that my time is up. We would ask that this court reverse to allow the defendants a full and fair shot with all of the pertinent evidence to present their case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We will be at recess.